Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. I am going to be calling my guest, so hang with me. I am putting the numbers now. My guest is going to be Ryan Cavallini, and he's pretty well known in the film industry. If you watch slasher movies, I'm sure that you've seen his. So here we go, and hopefully he'll be on soon. Ryan Cavallini. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello, Ryan. Can you hear me, Ryan? Okay, good.
Yeah,
that
I can hear you good.
We can start. Good.
All right.
Well, I have had some trouble, so that's a good thing.
Trial and error. I understand.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fine. How are you all doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I mean, you know, I guess I could complain, but like my dad used to say, who would listen? So.
Exactly. Exactly. It's Friday, though, so we're all happy, right?
Yeah. So I guess we'll just get right into it.
Sure.
Okay, now, when you were growing up in Pennsylvania, who would you say gave you the most encouragement in your dream to make films?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question, huh?
Well, if you don't want to answer it, you don't have to.
Well, more or less, probably my parents were always supportive of, you know, filmmaking. Probably they were the most supportive of doing it. They're the ones that bought me my equipment and put up with me running around the house with my friends and making horrible monster props and what have you. So I probably chalk it up to them for being the most supportive.
So they got you, like, your first camera and all your equipment and everything?
Yeah, they were gracious enough to do that.
Aw. Were they ever in any of your films, your homemade films?
No. They'd view them later and just shake their heads like, what's wrong with our son?
Yeah, but you know what? All parents do that no matter what their kids do.
Absolutely.
So when you first started doing that when you were a kid, did you have any inkling at all that it would turn out to be, you know, what it is, where you've got a little bit of a cult following?
You know, when I was a kid making them, I was just in love with horror movies at the time. That was like, I just couldn't get enough horror movies, and that's what I wanted to make were horror movies. And then the Indiana Jones stuff, I always liked the adventure movies. And then, you know, through high school, I made these horrible movies and went to college and made more horrible movies. And I learned in college, I grew up through the college time of, like, the Robert Rodriguez's and the other filmmakers that were kind of out there doing it on their own. And they were kind of bucking the Hollywood system at the time. So at the time, I had a lot of friends that were in college and kind of went to California to make movies and tried to be in the business, and they never really got to where they wanted to be. So at the time, I thought, well, why should I go to California and struggle when I can just struggle here? So I ended up doing was just staying here and making films and just kept making films and just kept at it as much as possible. And it's crazy over the years that I'd still be making them, but it's such a love and passion that I don't think I could really give it up. It's too much of a therapy for me now.
Yeah, I think it is for a lot of people that do films. Because why wouldn't it be? If it's something you love, if you're doing something you love, it's going to help you.
Absolutely. You know, the creative stuff's always the way to work out issues that you might be having, or the way to express things in a safe manner, I guess. So I just never thought we'd be to where we are with, you know, what's doing conferences and actually people know our films and actually buy them. I guess that's the biggest thing. People actually buy them and watch them. So, you know, it's just, it's, I'm grateful. I'm not a huge Hollywood filmmaker, but you know, I'm a filmmaker in my own right, I guess, you know.
Well, you know what? Not all good movies come out of Hollywood. And not all of Hollywood's movies are good.
Very true. It's kind of the recycling bin there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I know that you've been making movies for over 30 years, so, but you did a lot of shot-on-video films. You want to talk about that for a while, what it was like to do the shot-on-video movies, what some of the names of them were, and what they were about, and so on and so forth. We've got an hour show, so you can talk as long as you like.
Okay. Okay. I'll take a deep breath and we'll go slow. You know, like I said, like through high school and through college, I was making films, but they were very low budget, just things to practice on more than anything. And then over time, we got a chance to kind of make a film, because at the time I was really bugging distributioners, like, what do you need to make a movie, or what element, what are you looking for? Because at that time I thought, if you can get a movie in distribution, then you kind of made it. Like, that was my big idea. If you can get a movie in distribution, you're on that platform, I guess. So we started cranking out as many bad horror movies as we possibly could. And I would go to a lot of the distributors and ask them, well, what are you looking for? And they would tell me. So we'd run off with a few $100 that we had and try to make a film like that. And luckily, a few small distributors liked our stuff and would take them and pay us a little bit, you know, enough to make another movie. And they would tell us, you know, can you make one like this? And we would. We would try our best to, you know, kind of make them happy and make us some money enough that we could keep making films. So a lot of the early stuff was just a lot of horror ripoffs. Like we did a movie called Day of the Axe, which was really a ripoff of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And did a movie called Demon Slaughter, which was completely an Evil Dead ripoff. And, oh boy, what else did we make? House of Carnage was one. And then we kind of got into some horror comedies, which were very popular, which was the Dead Body Man movies. We did three of those, and it was kind of like the trauma films of ours were just straight-out disgusting horror comedy at its best. They actually had a little cult following for a while, which was funny. You go to conventions and these guys would come up to you and ask you questions about the movie that I'm like, how do you even know that? But they would follow you on these forums and stuff and always have these oddball questions. I'm like, people actually do watch this stuff. So you know, we just kept making them, over the years it just kind of, distribution got is tough to do anymore, but because nowadays most filmmakers can distribute their own stuff, they don't really need a distributioner. But
right.
I kind of changed gears at one point because the horror movies just were not doing it for me. It was just kind of old. So I decided to move more towards, like, documentary films more. And I had a love for, like, UFOs and ghosts and Bigfoot. So we decided to make a documentary on Bigfoot, which kind of took us in a completely new direction. And documentaries, I've never done one at that time. And making that one was, like, a new experience because it took almost 3 years to make the film. I'm like, wow, this takes a long time to make these. I don't know if I can do another one. So, but it introduced us to a new world of kind of filmmaking because there's a whole different crowd for Bigfoots, UFOs, and monsters. There's a whole different type of crowd of people, I guess. So the last 10 years, we've been really kind of focusing on just a lot of documentary stuff and local folklore and such as like the Lost Coast of Dense Run's a big popular one we have right now, and The Legend of Davy Lewis. Mountain Devil was our Bigfoot movie that was extremely popular. And we actually just finished making Mountain Devil 2, which is a sequel to the last one, which is a Bigfoot movie. And there's a huge crowd just for Bigfoot people. It's crazy. It's like these big niches of people that just love Bigfoot or love UFOs. And so over the years, we've just kind of jumped into doing more documentary stuff, which is a little bit cheaper to do. Not a lot, but a little bit. So So I'm kind of very grateful for our starting off is making horror movies, because all that time we made horror movies, we didn't make enough money to make another one and keep making them. And that kind of kept us in business for the last 30 years, to be honest. So it's been a hell of a ride.
Sounds like it. Well, the horror movies are like the easiest ones to, well, none of it's easy. I come from a family of people that are in the industry, so I know it's not easy. But of all the different genres, it's the easiest one to, like, shoot stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what my family tells me.
And there's a huge following for it. I mean, that's never changed. You know, it's never fallen off. I mean, you could have the worst horror movie ever, and there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to watch it. Because they just love horror movies, and they search out bad horror movies.
Well, because horror movies, and being a horror movie fan myself, I know that some of them can be, you know, quote-unquote bad, but they're not really bad, depending on what they have going for them. Because if you think about a movie like, look back at Halloween, the original one. Now, really, if you look at the movie itself, it really wasn't a great movie. But look how popular it became.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
same with the Friday the 13th movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Same thing with Friday the 13th. The first one, I thought, well, really, this isn't a good movie. But you know what? I bet they'll go into like 13 and 14 sequels, and they basically did do that.
And they're still doing them. Yeah. You know, it's just been a while since we've seen them.
Yeah. So now I noticed that on IMDb, because I do research on IMDb, I noticed that your first credit was for being producer for Tales for the Midnight Hour. Now, I know you've worked with Phil Herman. He's a mutual friend of ours. I think you worked with him on that one, didn't you?
At the time, years ago, we were able to, like, he would shoot part of his stuff where he lived, and I'd shoot part of my stuff where I lived, and we would just edit it all together, because we're broke. We're broke, you know, you can't travel, but what's the cheapest way to do something? And, we made this little kind of anthology called Tales for the Midnight Hour, and I think just a year or two ago he released part two, which I kind of said, part one, we can burn that one. We can get rid of that one. I'm like, is there still master copies of that somewhere? It was one of those films. I'm like, yeah, we did it, but let's not talk about it. It was more of a learning experience, you know? So, Phil and I did a few things back in the day, back when, you know, video horror films were kind of taking off.
Let me see. I know you've got quite a few credits here, but the way that I pick them, and a lot of people think, oh, I don't know about her, but I try not to be like everybody else, you know, because everybody seems like they just do like the same formula every time, and I don't do that, except for the way I pick the movies that I ask to discuss. I usually pick them because of the name, like if I find it interesting, or if I've seen it, or, you know, something like that. So one of the ones, I know you already talked about The Dead Body Man, and you've done, like, how many sequels have you done? Just because
there's three of them.
There's three, okay. Because it's not on, I don't think it's on IMDb. What's the third one?
The first one was Dead Body Man. Yeah, the second one was Dead Body Man 2, Separation Anxiety. And then we did a third one called Dead Body Man Chronicles. And I feel bad for that film because it's, I think, one of my favorite films, and I just kind of got lost in the shuffle of things. We had a distributioner, and it kind of fell through, and then it kind of sat on the shelf, and I couldn't find the right place to put it. And I got with SRS Cinema, who was ran by Ron Bonk, and we kind of came up with a deal for all three films, like in a package. And to this day, he still distributes all three of those films in, like, a package, like a 3-pack, 4-pack package deal. And I think all three of them are still on Vimeo. Yeah, so It was kind of, like I said, like our comedy horror film, like kind of Trauma style. It's just way out there. About a guy named Willie who hears the voice of God to go and do God's doings, which there are crazy antics and just crazy characters and just crazy situations that are just more fun. It's a good beer drinking movies, basically. You know?
Yeah, I love horror comedies, so I'll probably want to watch those myself. I haven't seen them. Who knows for what reason? Maybe I just have never come across them, or you know how that is. You can't always find movies
yeah.
that you want to watch.
They kind of fell to the way.
I'm sorry.
They just kind of fell away. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I can hear you. There's just like a little bit of an overlap. Sorry.
Oh, gotcha.
Go ahead.
That's okay. Oh, those films kind of fell to the side of the road a bit, which is a shame. I mean, they're very old films, probably from 2006 to 2008. So they never really got a proper release, so a lot of people don't really know about them, which is, it's sad, but, I mean, they're out there. If anyone's listening, look them up. They're on Vimeo, I think, so check them out.
So you did one called Aspiring Psychopath. Now tell me about that one. I like the name.
that was a film about a female serial killer who was learning how to become a serial killer. So she kidnaps another serial killer to have him teach her how to be one. And it was kind of a fly-by-night film. One of the distributors was asking, can you do a female serial killer film? So we quickly put this one together, like, fast. I don't even think we had half a script written. It was just kind of ad-libbed to what we wanted to do and where it was going to go. And it's kind of like a little fan favorite. And to me, it was like, wow, we really put that together quick. And it seems like we should just do them really quick. People seem to like them. If we take our time and really concentrate on them, people don't really pay attention to them. So maybe those are the formulas. So, again, we got it to Ron Bonk from SRS Cinema distributes that film as well. And it was just kind of a quick little film to do.
Well, those are the kinds of movies that I like, the ones that are a little bit different, you know, like having – like one of my friends did this movie where the female is the one that's doing nasty stuff to the male instead of the other way around, because it's always a man doing something to a woman. And so he decided that he was going to do the opposite. And I like that kind of stuff, because men doing stuff to women, that gets old. So
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that,
you got to shake it up a bit.
Yeah, so that Aspiring Psychopath does sound like it would be interesting.
And that's like the greatest thing about horror movies. It's the most creative field you possibly can be in. You can do anything. And you can. There's no real rules to it, you know? I mean, you can come up with anything, and it's going to be new or maybe different or something else. But I always think horror is the most creative subject you can possibly make a movie about, you know?
Oh, I agree. One of my filmmaker friends, he made this movie, and some people were, of course, you know, haters. They were talking bad about it, and it actually was pretty good. I wouldn't say it was like the best, but it was pretty good. And he had everything in there: vampires, werewolves, zombies, and then he also had a zombie that got bit by a vampire, and then the zombie turned into a vampire. Yeah, and that's something you don't see every day.
No, you got to make a little twist to it, you know. What's the one I watched not too long ago? The zombie beavers. I mean, I watched it because of the title. Just because of the title, it caught my interest because it was something different, you know.
Oh, I've done that, because I've watched this movie called, actually right now I can't think of the name of it, but it was about zombie strippers. That might even have been the name of it. Now, You know, I'm heterosexual, so I don't care about female strippers. Now, male strippers, yeah, I want to see those. But it just was the name of it. And then as I was watching it, I'm like, this is funny, which they actually intended it to be, because the one is doing a lap dance on the guy, and he's, you know, and then she bites him.
Who's and like, how can you take that stuff seriously, you know?
Yes, well, yeah. Oh, one of the best ones was, and it's an old one, and I'm sure you've probably seen it, called Frankenhooker.
Oh, classic, yeah.
And of course, when she said, want a date? I bust out laughing every time she says that. And for the listeners that haven't seen that movie, it's kind of like what it says. It's a Frankenstein movie where this guy is taking different pieces of different hookers' bodies and putting them together to get the perfect hooker. And so she, once she's done, she goes out working, asking for dates, looking like Frankenstein's monster.
Sounds like a regular Saturday night.
Yes. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to get away from your movies.
Oh, no. It's a classic. I love that film.
Yeah, oh, me too. I love that movie. It's so funny. So let me see. You did something called Stockholm Syndrome. Now, is that one of your documentaries, or is that it just happened to have that name, even though it's a horror movie?
That one's a horror movie. It's probably one of the darker films we've made. It's based on the whole mental health diagnosis of a Stockholm Syndrome victim, which is basically if someone beats and tortures a person to the point where they understand that, and that's all they know. We thought that was a pretty interesting concept, and we kind of put that with human trafficking, because most human traffickers are usually come out with Stockholm Syndrome at some point. So it was a very serious film, and it was probably one of the toughest films to shoot. We shot it like half of it through March, which was like blizzards up here, and we were filming in an old factory and out in the woods, and it was probably one of my best films I've ever made, to be honest. It's very gruesome. It's very some very nasty graphic scenes, but again, we were shooting it for a distributioner, not for, you know, what we wanted. But the whole concept of human trafficking, it's some of the stories I read are worse than the horror movies. You know, there's some really nasty stories out there. But we try to kind of bring that all together with the whole mental health concept, and kind of came up with gangsters and this human trafficking ring. And right now, that movie is actually available on Amazon Prime. And I can't remember who distributes that one. I lose track. I got so many different ones out there. The Sleazebox. Sleazebox distributes that one right now.
Well, excuse me. Were you done talking? Because I don't want to like start something else if you had something else to say.
Oh no, I'm fine. You tell me, shut up if I'm talking too much.
Oh no, because we still got 36 minutes, so it's not like, oh well, you're talking too much. Plus, I would never do that anyway. It's just with the overlap of the voices.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard for me to tell if the person is done talking or not.
I'll just do the Forrest Gump. That's all I have to say about that.
So I know that you acted in a few movies. Now, on IMDb, they only give you 4. You may have acted in more than that. I don't know. But I did want to ask you about these particular movies that, well, maybe not all of them, but there's 4. The Evil Tales 3, The Final Chapter, Dead Body Man, which we've already discussed, Day of the Axe, and Fury Redux. But, of course, acting in a movie is different than being a producer and everything. So if you want to talk about each one of those a little bit as far as acting.
I'm really not much of an actor. It's usually the actor didn't show up today. Who can I get to put in the place? Well, there's no one here. I'll have to do it. That's usually what happened. And I don't mind. I'll do a little small role if need be. That was mostly my films. In the Fury Redux film, my buddy Paul Gorman made that film, and he needed help filming one day, so I went up and ended up being an extra in one of the scenes. So I'm just a warm body sometimes. Sometimes I'll just stick myself wherever, whoever needs me somewhere. But like I said, I'm not much of an actor. I can tell you what to do, but I just can't do it. So do as I say, not as I do. So that's usually how I roll with things. So the actor better know what they're doing, because I can't do it for them.
Yeah, if you could, you would probably be doing it.
I'd rather be behind the camera. Out front, I just, it's not my zone. I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, it's not for everybody, because there are some people, they like to be directors and don't like to be actors. Some like to be actors and don't like to be directors, because contrary to popular belief, not every actor is an aspiring director.
Right.
I don't know how so many.
Right.
I don't know how so many people get that idea, but I just thought maybe you'd want to talk about it a little bit, which you did, so that's fine. You also do editing. Now, an editor of a movie can make or break a movie, because you may or may not know this about me, because I don't know what you and Phil discuss, you know, when I'm not around on Facebook, but I'm a movie reviewer, and I do it sometimes professionally. I don't do it all the time professionally, but I do it sometimes professionally. And so I have to get into those things about, you know, how the acting is, how the directing is, how the editing is, the music, the cinematography. So I get into details. And an editor can, because I've seen some bad editing and I've seen some great editing. So talk about that particular part of movie making, and if you like it or not, being an editor.
It's like putting a puzzle together that you don't know what the picture is going to be. You know, that's always my concept when I'm editing, but I almost feel like I have to edit the film because I have the vision of the film in my head. And for me to explain it to someone else, it's just wasting time, or they're not going to get it, or I'm going to be like, that's wrong, completely redo that. And I just don't want to waste someone else's time. So it's just easier for me to get in there and just edit. And over the years, I think I've become a much better editor than ever, because it really is an art form to editing. I mean, how to make those feelings or grab an audience by the moments. And that's one of the big things I've been really working on over the years is grabbing the audience. Where's those feeler moments in a movie? Like, you have to convey them. You have to bring them to light. And some of the tricks I've learned how to use is laying just a piece of music first and then editing to the music. Or if there's a scene I've edited, well, it just doesn't work for me, but I'll lay a piece of music in there, and now it kind of works. Now I can work at it better. So it's really an art form between a narrative film and documentary film. It's two different types of editing almost. I think with editing a documentary, you can kind of fill in the breather moments a little bit. And with a narrative, you almost have to keep that constant pace of that drama going, like that pushing ahead.
Yeah.
So it's really an art form. It really is. It's almost like every part of a film is an art. You know, you got, you know, your actors who, that's an art, how they do that in directing and editing for cinematography. It's so many pieces of art that you have to learn how to do, but I think the editing is the biggest one, because that's the picture you're putting together. I mean, it's putting these puzzle pieces together, and boy, when you're done, it better have a picture on there. You better not have any missing parts, but I really think, personally, this is just my opinion of myself, is that I'm getting better with every film. Like, the worst editing experience I ever had, absolute worst. We did a film called The Exorcism Prayer, which was a documentary on exorcisms throughout Pennsylvania. And, the whole film was a nightmare. I mean, completely a nightmare. we had the worst experiences. Well, and it was funny because a lot of the priests said, you're going to get attacked. You're going to have problems. And the biggest problems I had was editing. Like, for some reason with this film, I had every problem with the software and getting the movie out of the computer. But once the movie was done, I've never had any problems since. It's just the weirdest thing. It's like that some demonic thing was cursing the editing computer and causing all kinds of problems. I suggest other filmmakers don't do movies about demons. They get pissed off and give you a bunch of trouble.
Actually, I'm not really laughing because I know that stuff like that happens. So I'm not laughing.
That's just a little piece of it. Like, three of us got health problems. I was life flighted. Like, every part of making a movie, there was a problem, and it was a big problem. It wasn't little problems. I actually had a demonologist send us medals that were blessed to put around my house. I had problems here at my house. I had things knocking on the walls. My cat, for some reason, would attack me for no reason, which she never does. Like, she was hissing at things that weren't even outside. Even the artwork, we had problems with that. Like, we couldn't come. Every time we'd have a JPEG come in, there would be these blurs in it. And the artist that did them was like, well, I don't have it on my end. I'm like, well, why do I have one on mine? Like I said, trying to get the movie out of the computer was a nightmare. It was, like, the worst film ever to make. And then after we had it locked down, I actually said out loud, this is done. We are all done with this movie. And after that, we were good. We never had any problems after that. But I don't recommend people doing movies about exorcism. It's like that curse thing. Do you ever watch those on TV, the curse of the movie The Exorcism, the poltergeist, how many bad omens occurred? It was kind of like the same thing. Like, three of us almost died. It was, like, the craziest thing.
Yeah, not a good experience. But I just wanted to say something because you were talking about your cat. Now, I think that what it was, of course, I wasn't there, but just because I have heard these experiences and I know they happen, and I also know about cats, and they can see things that we can't. So I don't think your cat was actually attacking you. I think your cat was attacking one of those, whatever it was, spirits, demons, whatever. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And you just happen to, you happen to be in the way.
Absolutely. And it was crazy. Like, when we were done, the cat went back to normal. It was even, we had knocking in the walls. We had just weird things happen around the house. That's why we had these medals put up above the windows and the doors. Just for protection until we were done. I still have them up, though. I don't know why. I just I feel like if I take them down, that could be bad.
No, that's understandable. Once you put stuff like that up, you really don't want to take it down. I totally understand that. So you don't have to try to explain it to me.
Yeah.
So, one thing I wanted to ask you about, too, was if we're done talking about editing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we got completely off the editing thing, didn't we?
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure, because I was going to ask you about being a cinematographer, because I know that you've done it at least three times that I know of, because you did the first two Dead Body Mans. You were the cinematographer, and also the Day of the Axe. Now, was that one of those where, well, you had to do it because you didn't have a cinematographer, or do you actually like to do cinematography?
Actually, I've done cinematography on all my films. Probably IMBD has it messed up. Yeah, I've done it on all my films. I prefer to be my cinematographer just because I know exactly what I want. And sometimes you show up in a location, you're not sure how it's going to go. And I like to look around and like, well, this will look good this way or that way. And now I'm using different lenses, which is kind of a new concept I've been doing the last few years, like just using different types of lenses and different lighting techniques. So so I like to be in control of that the most, because trying new techniques. And as a cinematographer, you should be trying new things. And now you got droning as a cinematography type of thing. Like, now we're doing a lot of droning. So I've learned that. And it's just me being a control freak more than anything, I think.
So you're one of those that actually likes wearing all the hats.
When you're on a small budget, I think you almost have to.
Right.
Since I'm producing, I'm the one forking out the money. I want to know where the money's going and what's it being used for. So, yeah, a lot of my friends will say you're kind of controlling, but when you're producing it, it's a different story. I am going to be in control more, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, if somebody has to be in control of the movie, and if it happens to be you, well, then you're in control. That doesn't mean you're necessarily controlling, per se. But I was just going to suggest about this cinematographer thing, because you know you can get on there and fix stuff yourself, because they only have three on there. So you can go in there and add all the other ones on there, so you can – people can look at this and think, hey, he's got a lot more than that now. Because I looked at that and thought, oh, he's only done three. That's kind of odd. And then you said
I hardly
it with all of them.
I hardly ever go on IMDb. Oh, you're okay. I'm sorry. I probably interrupted you. I hardly ever go on IMDb, and it's missing a whole bunch of films. So...
Well, that's why when I was talking about it, I said certain things for IMDb, because I know when I look on there, what I see isn't always everything, because quite often there's lots of things missing. Because that's why I had mentioned the shot on video, because some of them are on here, like the Dead Body Man. But quite a few of those that you mentioned are not on IMDb. So that's one of the reasons why I had brought that up first, because I knew there would be some that weren't on IMDb.
Well, ever since we went to like self-distributing, like the films don't pop up on IMDb. Like when we used to go through other companies, they'd put them up for us and take care of all that. But since we kind of streamlined everything to us doing everything, they don't pop up on there. But it's one of those things I need to do, and it's like on the last thing on my list to do anymore.
Yeah, because it's not like you need to do it in order to get people to watch your films, because they're still going to watch them.
Right. Honestly, Facebook's probably the best machine for everything right now. You know, promoting, getting yourself out there. I mean, it's the best free ad machine out there.
Oh, I know. I totally agree. And I'm like a facilitator, because I have introduced lots of people to other people, and sometimes, not always, but sometimes they end up doing projects together. And my first guest on this show, he was one of the people that I had introduced to somebody else, and then it just so happened that somebody called in, and it was the person that I had introduced him to, and they had ended up doing a film together. And so it was very nice that he actually mentioned that. He said, well, yeah. He said, Mac introduced us. And then he started talking about the film they did together. And I just thought that was nice that he even mentioned it at all. Because sometimes I will get a mention for introducing people that end up doing something together. And then other times it's like, it's never mentioned. And they just act like it was all them, when they never would have met each other if it wasn't for me. But I don't hold a grudge. I don't care. You know, give me credit.
And that's the most beautiful thing. Yeah. Just give me a few bones my way, you know, just to say, hey, you know.
But it is very nice when it does happen, when they do say something. Because even if it's in private, it's nice. Because I have gotten little emails and Facebook messages and stuff like that, where people thank me about, oh, thanks for introducing me to this person. Thank you for introducing me to that person. And just like if somebody tells me on Facebook that they're interested in such and such a thing, and if I know somebody that's working on something similar, then I'll ask both parties if they want to be introduced to each other. And most of the time the answer is yes. Every once in a while I've had people say, well, no, they don't want to meet anybody new on Facebook. but usually the answer is yes. But the only reason why I'm talking about is because, like what you said, Facebook is like the best thing. I can't tell you how many people that I personally know of that actually got work from Facebook, not from Facebook, but from the social media thing of going in there and putting yourself out there on Facebook. And then they end up getting work. Yeah, one of my friends just recently started doing bigger films. He was doing mostly like the short films, which a lot of people do when they first start. And so he's now working on a bigger one. And he was so excited because, and I can understand why, because he got a big name person. He, and hopefully I won't get in trouble for mentioning just his name, but I don't think I'll get in trouble for that unless I mention the name of the movie. But I'll mention his name because that's more important. He actually got Eric Roberts to be in his movie. And so, of course, he's excited. And so now he's putting that all over Facebook, and then all of his friends are sharing it. And then all of their friends are sharing it. And it goes all over the place because I've had people come to me that I didn't even know them, but they said that they had seen on a friend's post that was a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And then sooner or later, it gets back to me that, oh, I saw that. You shared it with a friend of mine, and they shared it with a friend who was a friend of a friend. And before you know it, it's like all over the world.
it's a curse and a nightmare, you know, Facebook, you know. But you're right. I mean, I've that's the only way I found actors and special effects artists. And even B-movie actors now have another second life, really. You know, now people can actually find these people and contact them, which before you can never, where are you going to find so-and-so? Good luck, you know. We had a chance, and we worked with Kevin, I can never say his last name. The gentleman that played in Basket Case 1, 2, and 3, Kevin, I can never say his last name. Anyway, we met Kevin at a festival, and he's like, you'll hold me through Facebook. And we ended up filming with him a short scene up in New York, and there was no other way I would ever got to meet him, really, if you know we weren't able to contact through Facebook. So it's probably the best tool for any filmmaker is Facebook. So that's all I have to say about that.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to start talking when you were still talking.
Oh,
that guy in Basket Case, his name, I know his name is Kevin, like you said, and it is a hard one to pronounce. And Kevin, if you happen to hear this and I'm pronouncing it wrong, you know, sorry, but since you weren't around to give me a little audio clip to tell me how to pronounce it, I might be pronouncing it wrong, but I do know how it's spelled. But what it looks like is Van Hentenrick. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I always mess it up every time. Sorry, Kevin, if you're listening, I apologize.
and he's very good, by the way, because I like his work. You know, those Basket Case movies, those are really good movies. They were. Sorry if I talk too long for myself.
Oh, you're fine.
So, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, you get carried away. well, one thing that I did want to ask you about, because we've got like 15 minutes yet, so it's not like, oh, we've got to hurry up and get done with this. I have lots of family, not lots, but I do have a few family members that are, and friends that are artists, and probably have more than one credit to this as well. But you have an art department credit for being doing artwork and being a storyboard artist. And I know people that do storyboards. Now, is that something that you do a lot, or was that only for Dead Body Man, or what?
I have credit for doing storyboards, but I don't know why, because my storyboards are just stick figures. But I just stick figure stuff, yeah, so I can show the art department, like, or whoever's going to do some illustrations for me, like how it should look, kind of. And then they ask me, what the hell is this? And I'm like, well, it's kind of this, but, this is some blood and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, we'll do our best. I'm like, that's all that matters.
Well, see, that's
so I'm not really a good storyboarder.
Well, that's why I ask these questions, because you can't always tell things from what's on IMDb, and sometimes it's not exactly what it appears to be, or they need to give it a name, and they don't really have a name for it, so
yeah,
they just give it a name. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. A lot of filmmakers don't like to do storyboarding, and I don't. I really don't, but actually, I've learned over the past few years, like, when you're doing, when you have animators involved and stuff, they really need storyboards, and they can't read your mind, and they look at a script, and they just say, what the hell is this? So I've learned to be a better stick drawer. So, I mean, if you're a filmmaker and you don't like storyboarding as much as I hate doing it, but it really does pay off at the end, because especially if you're using animators, they really need to know what you're talking about. So if you can get someone to storyboard for you and can pay them, go at it.
Yeah, because, hey, they got to have something to work by. You can't, like you say, you can't expect them to read your mind. Now,
right.
I know that you do also do directing and writing, and do you prefer one over the other? Well, actually, of any of the hats, do you prefer one over the other? And then once you're done answering that question, then if you would talk about your writing, you know, how you got into doing it, your own writing, if you've always been a writer, et cetera.
I enjoy both. Like, actually, like, writing, directing, and editing are, like, the top three. I really enjoy doing all three of them. Writing, like I always say, I'm a storyteller first. Filmmaking is just the art I use to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you're a low-budget filmmaker and you have no money, you better become real creative real quick. So
mm-hmm.
I kind of became a writer. Like, I didn't really choose to be a writer. I had to write because, like, I couldn't tell someone to write me something because they don't know what my limits are and what I had access to, really. So I would take elements of locations and hopefully a somewhat of a story I've heard and kind of just use the elements I had around me and just write a story. Because when you have no money, that's what you do, especially a horror movie. Like, well, I can get access to this, this, and this. So you have to write a story around that. And that's really what it became, why writing, I just became a writer. Over the years, I've enjoyed writing more because when you get a little bit more money to produce a film, it's a little bit more fun. You can actually write something that you can throw money at and go do. It doesn't happen too often, but, you know, every once in a while it does. So like, even recently with some of the bigger projects we've been doing, I've been really enjoying the writing just because that's the thing about filmmaking. I love the whole sense that I have this idea in my head, and I'm going to create it. Like, it's not there, but it's in my head, and I'm going to write it down, and I'm going to film it, and when I'm done, it's there. So it starts in your head as a story that you're going to write down and do this whole process. When you're done, there's a product. And I think that's the most coolest idea ever. And it starts with writing. It really does. So if you're a broke filmmaker like all of us, you know, that's the best thing to do is just what do you have access to and what can you use as a story and come up with something, you know, or just Google something on the internet or some short story or something that could do on the cheap, you know. So that's all I got to say about that.
Okay. Yeah, we still got like 10 minutes. So do you have any projects that you have in the works right now? Like, I know you mainly do documentaries now. Is there one that you're working on at this moment?
Actually, back in 2013, I released a movie called Mountain Devil, which was a Bigfoot documentary that we shot here in Pennsylvania. I never thought I'd do another Bigfoot film, but years later, there was a book written called The Creature back in 1979. And I got to meet the author who gave me the okay to do a documentary on his book. So we were grateful enough to be able to do Mountain Devil Part 2, which is based on this man's book. And we started filming that last year, and we met the author. He was from Erie, Pennsylvania. And he was very excited that his book was going to be made into a documentary, because the whole idea was, if you ever got a chance to read this book, it's called The Creature by Jane Clement. It's about this person's interactions with a Bigfoot. And to this day, people in the Bigfoot community don't know if this was a real story or not. It's very specific of Bigfoot behaviors and what have you. So we thought it'd be great to do a documentary on the book and who the author was and whether or not this story could have truly happened. So we filmed the whole movie over the past year. And about a month ago, the man who wrote the book, or who was the publisher for the book, passed away. So it was a long journey, and we were really sad about it. And finally, we get to release the movie next month called Mountain Devil 2, The Search for Jane Clement. So that film we have coming out, and September, we start shooting kind of like an anthology movie called Myths and Mutants. And it's really based on a lot of folklore stories throughout Pennsylvania. So we're grabbing stories about the Goblin of East End, the albino cannibals, and stories about the Straw Man, which are very much horror. It's going to be more or less a horror anthology of folklore stories throughout Pennsylvania. So I'm kind of excited to get going with that, because it kind of takes me back to the old days of the Blood Guts films that we used to do. It's been probably over 10 years since I've done the Bloody Guts type movies, but it's a documentary, but it's based on folklore, so that's the fun part. Like, this stuff kind of happened, so it's not me making up anything. This truly happened in some sense, so I'm pretty excited, because we ordered fake blood about a week ago, and I was all excited about it. Like, I haven't ordered fake blood in so long, so I'm really looking forward to shooting that film next, to be honest.
Oh, good.
And that's really, we stay busy. I mean, if we're done with one film, we're pre-production another film. And the wheels on the bus keep going until they fall off. So trying to tell as many stories before I croak. So, and it's just a passion. I love doing it. So I don't think I'll ever really slow down.
Well, and as long as you're able to, there's actually no reason why you should slow down.
Right, right. As long as we have funding to do it, and like I said, we've been blessed enough to be able to make money off the films we have made to make other films. So we're not getting rich from it, but we're making enough money to go make another film. So it's a horrible cycle, but it seems to work for us. So.
Well, we've got like 6 minutes and under 30 seconds. So usually around this time near the end, I ask if there's anybody, and I know there's always a long list, but if there's anybody that you want to give a shout out, then this is really where I let you do that.
Oh, there's so many people. It'd take more than 6 minutes.
Okay, gotcha.
I just appreciate her.
Yeah.
That works on the films.
There you go. There's nothing wrong with saying I appreciate everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
There have been other people that did that, because the one person I had, he's got thousands of people that he would want to thank, and I understand all that. So there you go. Everybody who has ever worked with Ryan Cavallini, he thanks you.
Yeah, I thank you. Anyone that's bought a movie, I appreciate it more than anything.
I'm sorry, say again?
Anyone who's bought a movie or rented a movie, said hi to us at a convention, I appreciate all of them even 10 times more, because they're the people that keep us going.
Oh,
you know?
See, there you go. That's a shout out.
Yeah.
If you want to tell people how to get a hold of you, how they can get a hold of you, like say if they want to talk about making a movie together or they just want to chat with you or whatever, what is the best way for them to contact you?
Facebook, just Ryan Cavallini on Facebook. We do have our Facebook page for Legend Hunters, which is Legend Hunter Films. That's the best way to keep up to date with our films and what we're doing, or just the weird, bizarre stuff that I run across. And our website, which is www.legendhunterfilms.com. If you want to see any of our stuff, DVDs are available through our website, or you can see our films on Amazon, Vimeo. They're on Prime. So they're out there. Just look around. You'll find them.
Well, if there's anything else that you want to talk about, because we still have like 4 minutes, and we can actually stop whenever we want as long as it's before the time. Now, once we get close to the time, if we're not done, they just cut us off. But we've still got four minutes. So if there's something you want to talk about, please do.
One of the biggest questions I always get asked, usually when we were at film conventions, was from other filmmakers starting off, like, well, how'd you do it? Or how do you get going? I always tell every one of them, just do it. You just do it. I don't know how to tell you, get a camera, get your actors, get your writing down, you know, just do it. Don't talk about it. Just do it. And then your films are going to suck to begin with because you're new to it and you're starting off. I always say every film I made sucked. I just hope to get better at it, you know. So if you're a filmmaker, you're a starting filmmaker, and you want to get it, make a film, just do it, you know. Don't figure a way to do it. And there's always a way to figure it out. I mean, if your script has a scene where there's a house on fire, well, now there's this beautiful thing called stock footage. You can get stuff that kind of comes close to what you're looking for. I wish I was a young kid nowadays making movies, because these new filmmakers at this age and all the technology that's out there, it's like a field day now. Back in the day when I started, it was VCR decks and Betacam and Hi-8s. And I mean, we went through the ringer with making movies back in the old days. Nowadays, I mean, if you want to be a filmmaker, you got every tool possible, and everything's so much cheaper now than what it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get your hands on just about anything. So there's no reason not to be able to go out and make your movie. And there's ways to get your movie out there now more than ever. 10, 20 years ago, it was all distributioners. You had to go through a distributioner. That's the only way your film was ever going to be seen. Now you can be your own distributioner. There's avenues for everything now. And that's a beautiful thing. And now when I talk to other filmmakers and they're like, well, I can't do it because of this or that, I'm like, that's bullshit. You can do it. There's no reason why you can't make your film. So keep at it, do it, and don't let distractions get in your way. Just do it. So that's my 2 cents to any filmmaker or even documentary filmmaker. Just, you know, you get that vision, that story you want to tell, just do it. Grab a camera and go. I mean, you'll figure out the logistics later. So that's my 2 cents. That's all I have to say about that.
You know, people like to hear that kind of stuff. That's one of the reasons why they listen to these interviews of people that they watch their films. They want to hear stuff like that, like what is their opinions and if they have any things to say about the certain things, which you just did, talking about just doing it. Just go ahead and do it, and don't let anybody tell you no. And there's only like 45 seconds. So this one person that was on my show, he was told by somebody that he could never make a movie, and now he's made 160. And so I suggested to the one that was on the show, I said, you need to find that person and tell him you've made 160 movies.
Rub it in your face a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The word no doesn't exist. It just doesn't. You just got to figure out a different way to do it.
Well, right. And there's nothing wrong with rubbing people's noses and stuff. So, no. In my opinion. Okay.
Plus
so
fun,
now
right?
We're down. Yeah. Now we're down to just a few seconds. So I'm going go ahead and shut the show off. And thank you very much, Ryan Cavallini, for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I totally appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.